As we focus on the Good Shepherd, we focus on Psalm 23. And so let us start with another presentation on Psalm 23. I do not know what your experience is with sheep, and if you've had the opportunity to shepherd them, I've only had a very limited opportunity to do that. But my sister just had 40 lambs. Well, her sheep had 40 lambs. I think this year it was less. Other years she's had up to 60 lambs. So we just had a gathering there a couple weeks ago, and the grandchildren and great-nephews and nieces so enjoyed feeding and petting the lambs. My granddaughter stuck her, was feeding the lamb with a bottle on this hand, and the other lambs came and sucked on her fingers. And she liked it. A couple years ago, we were at my sister's farm, and in the midst of that many lambs, there was a lamb that had just been born, but it would not take to its mother's milk. So they were bottle feeding it, and Rebecca held the lamb all day and tried to get it to feed. And it would not get any better, no matter how hard we tried. The next morning, my brother-in-law said, "We're taking the lamb to the vet." So we drove, went to the vet, and they tried to do something for the lamb, and we had left, and they called us and said the lamb died. So they have a lot of sheep and a lot of lambs. And every year there are some who die, and this year there were several that's out of the flock that were born who didn't make it. Caring for our lambs in life is so much like that, caring for our lamb. And of course we said Jesus' phrase, "Feed my lambs, take care of my sheep." There's so many scriptures about that. But the one scripture that you and I all know is, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me lie down in green pastures, he restoreth my soul. He leads me beside still waters." The 23rd Psalm is what is the most popular scripture next to John 3:16. And whenever I do a funeral service, whenever I request a family, if they have a scripture, usually it's the 23rd Psalm. So we have taken that into our lives in the midst of all of those scriptures that are about shepherding. Even in Genesis, the shepherds would roll the stone away in the well's mouth and water from the well's mouth and water the sheep. And back in Deuteronomy, talks about shearing the sheep. In Isaiah, he gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those that have young. Samuel, he took his staff in hand. This is a quiz. See if you know this one. He took his staff in hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, who are we talking about? David, the other great shepherd that Jesus knew so much about. Jesus talks about it. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? Where are the 99? You know, it was so hard when I was a young man listening to a great preacher every Sunday to always grasp it, but the Sunday that he had on the sign outside the church, "Where are the 99? I never forgot that. That Dr. Faust preached such a sermon on the 99. And of course, it says, "For you were like sheep gone astray, but now you've returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls," says Peter in 1 Peter. There's that other side I know that after I leave, savage wolves will come in among you and will not spare the flock. Watch out for false prophets, says Jesus. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. Must be a rhyme that came out of that somewhere. You know, as we talk about the 23rd Psalm and reflect upon the Scriptures, I want to go to the last verse. I shall dwell in the house of the Lord. Today we read my whole life long. Or I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever is what we traditionally know that verse as. I want to reflect on the dwelling. Where do you and I dwell? Where do we dwell in our lives? Geographically and physically, there are so many places in which to dwell in our lives of automobiles that can take us so rapidly to some place. At one point in time, I read somewhere that how when automobiles were going down the street at 25 miles an hour, and everybody thought that they were speeding so fast in that Model T or A or whatever it was. And then now, you know, we can go to Montana or Germany and drive 100 miles an hour. Where do we dwell? Where do we dwell physically? Speaking of 100 miles an hour, I don't know if I've ever confessed to you this little sin, but I was about 17. I had purchased my red Starliner, Ford Starliner in 1960. It was about 8, 9 years old. And my father let me go use my saved money to buy it. It was bright red. It had shiny chrome on it. But during that time, they were building I-70 across Columbus. And I was working for, if any of you remember, Revco Drugs. I was working for Revco as a high school student. And I had to go clear out. They transferred me clear out to Hamilton Road to a new store. And I had to drive out there with my Ford 352 four-barrel. We had a brand new freeway. People weren't using it yet. You know, back in those days, there wasn't nearly as many cars on the road, but I dwelled there. And one night, I remember, I said, I know I can get this car to drive 100. I got it up to about 108, 110. And I would do that when there wasn't any traffic on that highway. I couldn't imagine doing that now, even at 2 in the morning. And thank God I was okay. Where do we dwell? We dwell in the rapid lifestyle. We dwell in our homes, the place to escape from all that. We dwell in our television sets or in our computers or in our cell phones. We dwell there. There are so many places to dwell. We dwell in our work. It occupies us so much, and it is the way that we can make life successful for ourselves, and so we just keep dwelling. You see, dwelling is not just a place where we dwell geographically and physically, but it is a place that we dwell spiritually, mentally, that takes us in. And so where do we dwell? Some of us are city dwellers, some of us are country dwellers. Some of us try to do both and live that life. Some of us actually dwell in the value of our marriage and with our loved ones and with our children. Hopefully more and more of us do that. I shall dwell in the house of the Lord. What does it mean to dwell in the house of the Lord? Does it mean physically to come in here? Well, yes, that is a part of it. Dwelling here when we say this is the house of God. It's a ship turned upside down that sails for Jesus. Dwelling, where do we dwell? How do we dwell in the house of the Lord? So we can say we give Sunday morning to this. Out of our busy week, our lives, our dysfunctions that we have to wrestle with, our joys that we have to wrestle with, our children's needs, our parents' needs, all the family needs. Where do we dwell? And how do we dwell with the house of the Lord? I think that's the question that Psalm 23 leaves with us. The scriptures are filled with the word dwell, or dwelling. In John, 1 John, the letter of John, that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. Hereby know we that we dwell in Him. Then he goes and takes himself seven other spirits more evil than he is, and they enter and dwell in him. So on the one hand, we dwell with Christ. On the other hand, there's that other force that's coming into our lives constantly. And as Jesus tells us to love our neighbor as ourselves, or love our neighbor and ourselves, what does that say about where we dwell? Sometimes we have to dwell in our weaknesses, our physical ailments. Sometimes we dwell in our emotional elements. However good or strong or however weak. Colossians says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, in all wisdom, teaching, admonishing one another with psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, singing with grace in your heart and of the Lord. I wonder how much this week we, in our prayers and meditations for all these tragedies, did a hymn come to your mind? Did a scripture come to your mind? Did God rest inside of you? I know for me it was such a challenging week. Once you have dealt with tragedies like that, been there when I was there present with them, with the mining families in West Virginia, which I have shared with you before. Once you dwell with people in the midst of a tragedy, when you see another one, yes, it affects all of us anyway, but it just goes so deep inside now. And we experience that. All of you, or many of you, have met my dogs. The one, he's a Springer Spaniel, and he springs. Peggy's sitting here laughing. He's jumped all over her. And he's now better than a year old, and we're trying to get him under control. And my little Abigail Cocker Spaniel, a few years ago when I was retiring from the Council of Churches and they did a story on me, it was on the front page of one of the papers in Charleston, they put Abigail right there. She became the most famous dog for a week in Charleston, West Virginia. But I tell you this story because the year that I cared, in 2010, that I had the responsibility of caring for the 29 families who lost a loved one in the Upper Big Branch mine explosion. And I managed the fund. There was over $1 million donated to that fund that I had to distribute to the families in need at that time before all their dollars started coming from the companies and the courts and all those things. But it had been a challenge for me. There were other deaths at that time. A month or so later, I was driving back from church Sunday afternoon, going up the freeway in West Virginia, going down to Charleston, Route 77. It had been a good day in church. I stayed a little extra time, and we had a committee meeting, and it went very well for the future and plans of the church. I was an interim like I am here, but that was a very part-time interim. But on that day, I'm driving back, and three cars ahead of me, I could see this car on the other side of the freeway come right angle right across the freeway. It crashed into a car. It went over the railing. It was very difficult to see all that. No one could figure out how that car got turned the right angle at, 70 miles an hour. So I stopped, again, the third car back. We rushed over the railing, down to the car. The car had hit. Two ladies, older ladies, were on, sitting there on the freeway. They said they're okay inside the car. They didn't want to get out, even though we worried that cars would keep coming. So we went down and focused on the other car. And in the back seat, there was an infant and a toddler that we pulled out. And they handed me this infant little girl. I've prayed for so many people who'd been in accidents before. I've prayed for the firefighters and the rescue teams that dealt with problems. But all of a sudden, I was right there. We got someone to give the little boy mouth-to-mouth artificial resuscitation. I kept saying, there's got to be someone here who could take care of the little girl and give it to her. She was turning purple, and a nurse came, pulled right in, said, can I help? I said, yeah, I'll give her mouth-to-mouth. And so I handed her over. Then they pulled out the mother. Well, we couldn't get the mother out until the squads came. The little boy lived a couple days, and we had a time at the hospital of prayer, meditation, and love for that family. I learned that it was a family who was very active in a church, a Baptist church in that community. Matter of fact, it was the grandfather who was the preacher of that church, well-known, respected gentleman. And as we waited, finally the little boy joined his mother and sister in going to the Lord. How do you shepherd tragedy in life? So we shepherded and we prayed with that family. Helped the grandfather prepare to do the service. It was a couple weeks after that, where I had been a shepherd for all those families in the mine disaster, for the family that had lost their loved ones and such little tiny ones. And one evening, Rebecca and I were out on the deck, and our little dog, we called him Baxter, he did what he always did. We let him out. He ran down the steps of our deck, ran into the yard, played a few minutes, and he was trying to come back up the steps, and he was dragging his feet. What happened? Did he get hurt out here in the yard? We comforted him all night. It got worse and worse and worse, and the next day, we decided we had to take him to the vet. And by then, he could not move. He was in pain. We couldn't figure out what happened to him. And the doctor said he had a disease of the spinal cord, and that he would not make it past the weekend. They would comfort him and give him something. We waited for the weekend, and we tried our best to think, what could we do? They said, spend $5,000, maybe. You could go down to some hospital in Roanoke, Virginia, and they would give him some wagon on wheels or something that we could keep going. But I wouldn't spend that kind of money even on my loved little dog. But it wouldn't have worked in his case. So Monday, we go back into the back there, and they say, we're going to put him down. And so I call Rebecca, and as the phone rang, I burst out. I grabbed the little dog. I bawled. I feel so sorry for the veterinarian and the staff. I bawled and bawled, laying on the floor holding my little dog. I said, wow. I mean, it was uncontrollable over an animal. I was very fortunate. It was a couple of months later, I had planned and organized a retreat for all the prison chaplains in West Virginia, and I invited the chaplain of the National Guard who had been to Iraq so many times, and I knew him so well, and we shared together, and he was doing a wonderful presentation, and I said to him, Bruce, you've reminded me of what I've gone through this year. He said, what's that? I said, well, I mean, you know what I've gone through with the Upper Big Branch and this family, but you know what happened? My little dog died. And I burst out in tears. And this is what he said to me. Here's a shepherd speaking to me, shepherding me in great love. He said, Dennis, God gave you a wonderful gift. In the midst of all the tragedies that you've had to deal with, you received a gift of your little dog that got you to cry and get rid of all your grief and your tears that you had been so busy not expressing, at least inside of yourself, expressing it to other people, but not inside of yourself. So he said, can you see that as a gift? I said, wow. See, the Lord is our shepherd. It comes in strange ways sometimes, not ways we understand. But it is a question of where we dwell. And as long as we're dwelling in the Lord, our life, the things we do, the things we say, the things we feel so deep inside, that is what matters. And gathering here in church on Sunday morning, our responsibility is to help each of us dwell in that broader house of the Lord, the one that's inside of us, the one that's inside of us as a community, in friendship, in the love of loving our neighbor as ourselves. That's where we need to dwell. Even though the pace in our society takes us so far away. I believe I've been so gifted by God's love. And I know that all the sheep need a shepherd. Not just any shepherd, but a good one, a faithful one, who loves the sheep. There's nothing to compel with the shepherd to be faithful. Nothing to motivate the shepherd to be good. Love for the sheep must rule the day. Love must rule the shepherd. And as I, as a pastor, am the shepherd of a flock, all of us are called to follow the shepherd and also shepherd. We know that in the scripture, the hirelings sometimes are not the ones. They'll take care of the sheep, but when there's a big tragedy, they can easily pull away. But that's why we need not to be just a hireling. Someone who's, it's their job, someone who has God's love inside of them. I hope and pray that we've instilled that love at least a little bit in you, or taken the love that you already have inside and just bring it forth so you'll know that you're dwelling in it. Or we can be like on that slideshow, it's like in Mark, and we like sheep have gone astray. We could forget about Psalm 23 in our dwelling, or we can live it. As we go into this good neighboring plan, I want to ask that we have this little group I mentioned earlier, and so we can be disciplined about how to expand the art of loving our neighbor and being a shepherd. And so we would decide a thing like perhaps we're going to say, ask everyone to designate a day on a certain week for yourself. On this day, Wednesday or Tuesday or whatever it is, I'm going to commit this day to going out and loving my neighbor and shepherding. Or some other plan that we would develop. But also to have an opportunity for you to go forth and all of a sudden you went back and visited that neighbor that, you know, slammed the door on you. And you say, wow, and our preacher wants us to do this. So that we will know that we've got to figure out how to love our neighbor as ourselves in our actions, and that we can dwell there. May you dwell in the heart of Jesus Christ, who gave his life for you and me, who then rose for a new life, letting us all know that we can and will arise in him. We close this sermon with a video of The Lord is My Shepherd.